realised it's really hard to stop 30,000 arms buyers getting into the Exile Centre, but it's really easy and it feels amazing to stop a truck with a tank on driving into the arms fair.
My hope is that engagement in peace education is the thing that's going to challenge the institution of war, the seeds of war.
Welcome to Q Witness, the podcast from Quakers in Britain, all about taking action for sustainability, equality and peace. quaker.org.uk/QWitness.
Hi friends, I'm Chris.
And I'm Elizabeth.
This podcast is all about witness. Each episode, we discuss an issue that Quakers are active on. Quakers call this witness, action inspired by Quaker faith. This week, we're talking all about waging peace, specifically work against the arms trade and peace education.
And we have some good news for the week.
So the good news this week is that the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, just won the Nobel Peace Prize, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it's kind of almost like we won it again because we've been helping them in their work. So we didn't quite win it. That would be too much. But we have played a little part, which has been nice. And we've been celebrating this week in the office.
Yeah.
With tea and things like that.
Yeah, it's been quite a nice surprise,
buzz.
Actually.
Yeah.
Good buzz.
And it's kind of interesting to see nuclear weapons on the front page of some newspapers.
Yeah, finally. We've been waiting for that all year.
So, yeah, that's good. And maybe the UK government, the people in Westminster, members of Parliament and co, will maybe think about joining the treaty at some point, because that's what we're trying to get them to do. So far, they have refused to engage with those treaty negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really amazing point where lots of countries across the globe who do not have nuclear weapons are saying to the small number of countries that do that they need to get rid of them, which is great. And
yeah,
well done to all friends who've been part of that.
Yeah, because let's not forget the massive cost that comes from ever even thinking about using nuclear weapons, the total and utter annihilation that would happen, both in humanitarian and environmental cost.
Yeah, it's basically bad.
It's basically really bad.
It's one of the really bad things.
We should not do it.
Yeah, let's stop.
So yes, do write to your local Member of Parliament, let them know about your opinion, let's try and build some pressure and, you know, maybe attempt to persuade the government to sign it.
Yep. And we can stop wasting money on big guns and maybe start spending it on things that actually matter.
Yeah. What a great idea.
Schools and things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Schools, hospitals.
Yeah, the good stuff.
The good stuff.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. There's been lots of other great campaigning work recently. Our colleague Suki has been chatting to Sam about the work to stop Dicey, the really big arms fair in London, which Sam will tell you all about. Happens every 2 years.
So Sam will be telling you all about that.
Yes, he will. I've also been chatting to Ellis Brooks, who is the Peace Education Programme Manager, and talking all about some of the work that they've been doing around developing new resources for schools and things
to do with peace.
So
we try and include some of Quaker faith and practice in this podcast sometimes. And that's the big red book that gets updated every now and then. And it's the writing of Quakers from across the years, and there's some lovely bits in chapter 24 about the peace testimony. So 24.1.1 says, the peace testimony is not about deeds nor creeds.
It is about deeds.
Oh yeah, okay. So the peace testimony, thank you Elizabeth. Yeah, let's get this right. The peace testimony is about deeds, not creeds. Not a form of words, but a way of living. It is the cumulative lived witness of generations of Quakers. The peace testimony is not about being nice to people and living so that everyone likes us. The peace testimony is a tough demand that we should not automatically accept the categories, definitions and proprieties of the world. The peace testimony today is seen in what we do, severally and together with our lives. We need to train to wage peace. So that's a few quotes from one of the bits of Quaker faith and practice on the peace testimony. So that's why we called the episode Waging Peace, because we are doing that, basically,
yeah,
in lots of different ways. Lots of different and inspiring ways. I mean, not necessarily me or Elizabeth, but lots of other people.
Lots of people.
I mean, we are kind of too, but not a whole lot.
Tangentially.
Yeah.
And I remember a colleague saying to me once that if you're not challenged by the peace testimony, then you're not doing it right.
That's really good.
So yeah, we should probably hear from Suki and Sam about what's been going on with the arms trade.
Brilliant.
Let's do that.
I'm excited.
Hi friends, my name is Suki Ferguson and I'm here with Sam Walton. He works in Quaker Peace and Social Witness on peace and disarmament.
Hello, friends.
You've been working on stopping the arms fair happening in London. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So every 2 years, the world's largest arms fair comes to London. And as Quakers, we don't think that's very good. So we've been helping the Stop the Arms Fair Coalition, which meets in Friends House, to organise, to get people down there, to do creative protests against the arms fair. And we've been supporting Quakers from around the country to come and witness for peace outside the arms fair.
So you've been organising activists from around the country to take action. What does that look like?
So we had a few years ago, we had a real tactical moment of clarity where we realised it's really hard to stop 30,000 arms buyers getting into the Exile Centre, but it's really easy and it feels amazing to stop a truck with a tank on driving into the arms fair. And every single weapon that they want to sell there, they've got to get in. Release the demonstration copy. And so Stop the Arms Fair Coalition organises a week of action in the run-up to the arms fair, and there's different days in that. The Tuesday is the faith day that Quakers are quite involved in, and so people have been there, they've been protesting it, but they've also been blocking the road, taking part in non-violent direct action to try and disrupt the setup of the arms fair.
What would you say the impact of those demonstrations has been?
So this year, I think for the first time, it grew quite a bit. We had over 100 people arrested this year, and they were arrested for blocking the road. And that meant the police had to take them away, warn them. Often they had to, you know, cut them out of an arm tube, lock to someone else, or something like that. And that delayed the setup of the arms fair. We heard that some parts of the arms fair were 4 days behind schedule. We heard people inside the arms fair were being offered unlimited overtime. All of that cost the arms trade money. And also, you know, perhaps next time, if we do continue to kind of double every time there's an arms fair in numbers, then it's actually going to start to be logistically really hard to have an arms fair in London. I mean, that's all the practical side, but there's also the fact that every single person there protesting is willing to sacrifice their freedom because they see the arms trade as something that is so wrong, so abhorrent, so immoral, so damaging. And that shows that the arms trade is illegitimate. And ultimately, I think it does affect public opinion, which we've seen turn massively against the arms trade recently.
Why is it that Britain Yearly Meeting is working to disrupt this industry in particular?
So since the earliest days of Quakerism, we've opposed all outward weapons. And this arms fair is the biggest in the world, and it's the ultimate representation of, you know, those weapons being sold to, frankly, anyone that wants to buy them. There were 56 regimes invited from around the world to this arms fair, and those include countries like Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Pakistan, Israel, Turkey, countries on the Foreign Office's own list of human rights abusers, countries actively involved in war, countries actively repressing democracy and human rights, and it's so clearly immoral. So we're, as Quakers, in unity about that we think the arms trade is wrong, and part of that is supporting, you know, part of what I do at Friends House is supporting protests nationally to come together and oppose this awful arms fair.
What was it that Quakers brought to the week of action that was specific to Quakerism?
So there's a faith day of action as part of the week of action, and 2 years ago in 2015 there were about 35-40 people there. This year there are about 300, and at the Quaker Meeting for Worship we had about 200 Quakers, which is probably the biggest Quaker meeting in the UK that's going to happen this year outside of Yearly Meeting.
Wow.
And that's absolutely remarkable. I mean, our faith felt alive, and people from other denominations were just blown away that many Quakers would come. Quakers from the age of 0 to 98 were there, and about 10 Quakers were arrested. Many in the road, just during the meeting for worship, were kind of led away when they didn't move, but one abseiled off a bridge, another was locked on to someone else in the road. One Quaker didn't plan to get arrested at all, and the meeting for worship was so powerful, they felt that the Spirit moved them to stay, not to move. And it was a very powerful spiritual experience.
So building on the successes of this year's actions, what's next?
So the person that didn't move, that found themselves that they couldn't move from the road during the meeting for worship, he'd marched with Martin Luther King in America. And on that theme, it feels like this time we've climbed to the top of the mountain and we can see a promised land of a London without this arms fair happening, without this blight, this cause of so much war, so much torture, so much repression, so much famine in the world that starts in London because of this arms fair. We can see a London where that doesn't happen anymore. Of course, there's so much political will dedicated to making this arms fair happen, and logistically, this is the biggest arms fair in the world. It's going to be very hard to disrupt it enough to stop it happening, but we're beginning to get to that point, and that's absolutely remarkable. So we're going to keep using Friends House to support Stop the Arms Fair Coalition. We're going to keep giving these rooms to Stop the Arms Fair Coalition and keep involving friends. I mean, it costs us, this year we spent about 5 figures at least on giving rooms to Stop the Arms Fair Coalition, but we're dedicated to supporting this and we think it's worth it.
So it sounds like momentum is at an all-time high on this work. How is it that listeners can support ending the arms trade?
So it costs us a lot of money to host Stop the Arms Fair in Friends House. These are rooms we'd otherwise be selling at commercial rates to support our work in our church, so they can donate to Quakers in Britain to support our peace and disarmament work. And also there, in about a year's time, we're going to start ramping up to start opposing the next arms fair in 2019, if it happens. And they can subscribe to this podcast. There's also a newsletter called Educate and Disarm, and just stay in touch and we'll let them know when there's going to be a lot of events around the country mobilising people for this and when the days of actions are, so that they can get involved if they want to.
Fantastic. So we'll be sure to share the links for those next steps in the show notes. And thank you so much, Sam, for telling us that what's been going on in this work and the stories that go into the actions.
It's a pleasure.
Wow, that was amazing. I'm so inspired by what Sam does and all those people who took action around the arms fair. It's simply incredible stuff that they're doing.
Yeah, it really was. And there were so many different things that were happening as well throughout the whole week of action, whether that was from like different faith groups, which obviously Quakers were involved with, and lots of Quakers were involved with things like the arms fair stuff, which was all about using the power of creativity.
And Banksy had a little piece there, which was really, really amazing. I'm sure that helped kind of raise the profile and get more people involved. And there was a lovely guy there called David Henshaw, who's a Quaker in his 80s, I would think.
87.
And he's 87.
Yes.
And he was arrested in his wheelchair. And I spoke to him on the phone the day afterwards, and he was phoning up to get something or other. And I said, "How's it going, David?" And he was like, "Oh, I'm fine." And he was like, "How was being arrested?" And he was like, "Yeah, it was fun, actually." So I thought, well, if David can do it, and it was inspiring stuff, inspiring people.
Yeah.
And there's more places to be inspired and do action that are coming up over the next few weeks, months.
Yep, one of which is the Sanctuary Everywhere Conference in Brussels, the 1st to the 3rd of December. It's an opportunity to explore peace, human rights and sanctuary in Europe with Quakers from across Europe. So looking at the impact of the UK leaving the EU on some of those issues, and also ways in which we can create a continent of sanctuary. That's with the Quaker Council for European Affairs.
Based in Brussels. Lovely house. They're a group working in Brussels who do action on peace, equality, human rights. Yeah, kind of waving the Quaker flag in the European institutions and in NATO, I think, increasingly. So quite exciting work.
And they've done some really interesting research recently on child migration in Europe and the rights of child refugees especially. So worth checking out if you can.
So now we're going to hear from Elizabeth and Ellis. And Ellis is talking all about his work on peace education around Britain, working in schools and with kids, thinking through what it means to wage peace, to navigate conflict, and to find creative ways of responding to the challenges that we face in our everyday lives, as well as those nationally and globally. So let's listen to that.
I'm here with Ellis Brooks, who is the Peace Education Programme Manager.
Hey, hey.
Hi, Ellis. Been a while since we've heard your voice.
Yeah, so long. How is it in podcast land?
It's going all right. It's going all right. We've got a new host now.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, he's all right, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. But you have lots of interesting things that you've been doing with and lots of news from different Quaker organisations have been doing lots of peace education work.
Well, there's a lot of Quakers engaged in peace education. So my job is peace education programme manager at the moment. A lot of friends will know Izzy Cartwright, but she's on maternity leave, so I'm filling in. And yeah, I've been bopping around the place. So Quakers in East Cheshire Area Meeting have developed a peace education project, which they're starting to get off the ground.
Cool.
Doing whole day peace days in schools and starting to think about how they could deliver actual conflict resolution training. But they're just like one example, really. So I know friends in lots of places are starting to develop a peace education concern. And it's interesting because I know in this episode you've been talking about the arms trade today and taking action today. But my hope is that sort of engagement in peace education and working on that now is the thing that's going to challenge war, the institution of war, the seeds of war tomorrow as well.
Because getting kids to think about it now is actually then hopefully building the peacemakers of the future.
I hope so, yeah. And it doesn't only have to be war. Obviously, it can be about their interpersonal peace and conflict resolution, or it can even be about their inner peace and mindfulness and that kind of dimension. So yeah, Quakers in Mid Wales have been running a Peaceful Schools project for a few years now, and that's really successful. They're getting into lots of primary schools, and they shared that at Yearly Meeting Gathering, some of their approaches, and they're actually sharing it again with a course at Woodbrook, which is going to be on the 25th to the 27th of October. So I'd recommend any Quakers who would like to develop that concern, develop some skills around how they could deliver peace education, to look that up on the Woodbrook website.
Is it just for Quakers?
I think it's open to anyone who is interested in peace education, but it will definitely have that Quaker emphasis because it's jointly Mid Wales Quakers and Peacemakers in Birmingham, who are another brilliant organisation delivering peace education. But it can be very small as well, like in Ayr, where I was just up for Quaker Week. There are a couple of Quakers who have just done some training with the Rotarians about being peace ambassadors, and they want to take that into local secondary schools and offer it as a model, train the sixth formers pass it on down the school. So it's something that I think Quakers are doing partly because of the militarism concern and wanting to challenge that, and partly because they care about what's happening in the schools in their communities. So whether you're thinking big picture or the children, young people in their lives, I think it's a really good thing to get stuck into.
Great. Because friends in our show have also been doing some work around the militarism stuff in Scotland, have they not?
Yeah. There's been really good work, which we've discussed on the podcast before, I know. So there's the petition in Scotland on military visits to schools.
Mm-hmm.
But the Scottish National Party have just had their conference, and a motion was passed saying that the party policy would now be to end under 18 recruitment, so child recruitment, which is current government policy and practice. But to have a national party take that stance is a really important step forward. So that means the debate will have to be had now.
Yeah, great.
And Quakers in Scotland were really engaged in that work as well and putting that on the agenda. So well done to friends at that.
Well done. And there's lots of ways that people can get involved in taking action on militarism wherever they are.
Yeah, well, in fact, it's funny you mention that because we've got a brand new pack coming up out on the 21st of October called Take Action on Militarism.
What?
And yeah, coincidence, right?
Yeah.
So that's between us and Forces Watch. And it is very...
Who are Forces Watch?
Oh, Forces Watch are an NGO who really focus on the human rights effects of the military and militarism in the UK. So the effects of recruitment, the effects on the people who serve in the armed forces, and often highlight some of the bad practices and the harmful practices that happen in that context. So that they're a very key partner for us working on militarism, and their research is second to none on analysing it. But this pack is very focused as well on taking action. So whether you're thinking about the media, or you're thinking about a local school, or something like Armed Forces Day, it's got examples and tips and approaches you can use to question militarism, to kind of denormalise it, and feel confident in what you are saying, even though there'll be people who disagree with you.
Great. What kind of things are you suggesting people start to ask?
Well, let's take an example of when the military are recruiting in schools. So on careers days around the country, the Ministry of Defence provides lots of funding so that there will be a stand, probably not just for the Army, but for the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. So Quakers in the Northwest noticed this, and a Quaker called Jill decided that that was something that she wanted to raise with the school. Mm-hmm. And what that led her to do was set up a stand for careers in peace on the same careers day. So it's not saying there should be no voice in society for the military, but there is a responsibility in an educational space to give all the facts and to provide a bit of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a kind of ongoing theme, and that's what Jill did, and that's what lots of friends could do as well in a similar context.
Okay, that sounds like a really great idea.
It is.
Yes. Then further down the line, are there things that are coming up?
Yeah, we're working on something pretty big for 2018. So friends, if you're remembering one date from this interview, make it the 9th of November 2018. This is a Remembrance for Peace focused event as part of a project we're working on called Inspire. So all around the country we want to be engaging schools, children, young people in events on Friday the 9th of November.
So that's 2 days before Remembrance.
Days before the Remembrance Day, the 11th. Because obviously it's 100 years since mm-hmm. the end of World War One, which turns out wasn't the war to end all wars.
No.
But we want to put that back on the agenda. So we're having a big event here at Friends House in the Light, but there'll be events in cathedrals, in mosques, in other places of worship up mm-hmm. and down Britain. And Friends could help organise those. They could help encourage schools to attend. But we want it to be a truly national event from the grassroots, at the same time as we're engaging organisations like the BBC to kind of highlight this and give a bit of a space for a message of peace from young people at that time. In the build up to that, we'd really appreciate friend support in promoting that to schools, but also getting schools signed up to a peace charter that we've developed as part of Inspire.
What's in the peace charter?
It's a commitment to peace education. So within the school, you'd be doing more conflict resolution. You'd be trying to challenge the kinds of cultural violence that might happen in a school, whether that's about homosexuality or whether that's about race or religion. But also, going back to that idea of balance, it specifically says the school will provide balance when discussing war, the military and the armed forces, as well as asking young people what their role is in preventing war. So it is quite a strong message for peace that if a school signed up to that, then you could hold them to account and say, well, you're committed to this charter, so when you are inviting the armed forces to provide an activity day, how are you providing balance to your students for that?
Okay, that sounds like there are lots of ways that people can get involved at the moment then. Is there some way that listeners can keep up to date?
The best way people can stay up to date with us is to subscribe to Educate and Disarm, which is our e-newsletter. So if you go to quaker.org.uk/educate-disarm, then you'll be able to see previous issues and sign up, so that we'll keep you up to date with everything on that. You can also follow us on Peace Edu Quaker on Twitter.
Great. Well, lots to keep busy with then.
And look forward to hearing from friends. You want to get involved?
Thanks, Ellis.
No worries.
The pack that Ellis mentioned is being launched next Saturday on the 21st of October at the Take Action on Militarism gathering. It is free to attend, so do come along if you're interested in finding out more. It's being held at Friend's House in London. Sorry, guys who are not in London. We'll add the booking link to the show notes.
So if you want to catch up on all our peace-related work, then visit quaker.org.uk/peace. And don't forget you can rate, review and subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. And if you do that, interacting with it, it will help other people find it. So please do that. And leave any comments using the hashtag QWitness and we'll pick those up too.
And keep up to date with all the Quaker news between episodes by following at British Quakers on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
Thanks for listening.
Go well, friends.